This is the BBC Home Service. Here is a special bulletin read by John Snagg. D-Day has come. Early this morning, the Allies began the assault on the northwestern face of Hitler's European fortress. The first official news came just after 9:30, when Supreme Headquarters of the Allied Expeditionary Force, usually called SHAFE from its initials, issued communique number one. This said, under the command of General Eisenhower, Allied naval forces, supported by strong air forces, began landing Allied armies this morning.
And this was a sheer blind accident. It was because when I came down from Oxford, I had nothing to do. I had no qualifications for any particular trade, either the law or business or commerce or music or writing or anything like that at all, that I bored at home, wondering what I was going to do next and where I'd get a job, that I built myself a burned-up radio set with coils and goodness knows what, valves and all sorts of things, to pass the time. Knowing nothing about engineering, knowing nothing about electronics, I built this thing off little maps and so on, connected it all together, and it worked. And I remember listening to, I think, the first broadcast I ever heard in my life when I finally discovered that some noise was coming out of the pair of headphones I was wearing. I remember it was a broadcast from Opera Covent Garden and a voice saying, "Enter Mephistopheles," in very sort of precise terms. And then I listened for a bit more and I went on playing with this thing and enjoyed it. And I thought, well, what is this thing? I don't understand it. I mean, I don't know about it at all. What is it? And I thought, that's the sort of thing which doesn't seem to me to require any training at all, but it was fun. So I had a cousin at that time, or a cousin of my father's, I should say, who was broadcasting, and she said, have you ever thought about doing this? Ella McMahon, her name was, and she was broadcasting Irish vignettes. And she said, have you ever thought about it? And I said, yes, I have, but I don't think about it. And so she said, well, I'd ask when I go up again. And she did. And she arranged that I should write to an announcer called Dodgson, which I did. Dodgson wrote back and he said, oh, come and have lunch with me at the Strand Palace Hotel, I think. And he said, well, what you want to do if you want to join the BBC is to write to the controller, Admiral Carpendale, which I did. As a result of which, and only solely because of my past, that is to say, when I say my past, I mean my education of a public school at Oxford, that Carpendale thought I might be worth having a look at. So I saw him. He interviewed me in a passage on the top floor of Savoy Hill. And he was sitting on the edge of a sofa, and I was sitting on the sofa, and he was in fact taking part in a play. Lindsay Wellington was also in the play as well. And he asked me various questions. Did I write? Had I got knowledge of music? Had I any qualifications? And I said, no, sir, no, sir, no, sir. And he said, well, all the good you are to us, so I can go around the corner of the street and get somebody at £1 a week. Well, I very nearly accepted the offer of £1 a week. But however, he said, well, fine, but if anything turns up, I'll write to you. And I thought he meant it. Of course, he didn't. He meant go away and never come back again. Well, I duly reported this in detail, as I had to do with my father being a lawyer in every detail, that he said nothing at the time. But about a month later, he said to me, Admiral Carpendale would like to see you again at Savoy Hill. And I went round and saw the Admiral. And the Admiral then interviewed me again, and he threw a copy of the Radio Times in front of me, and he said, read that aloud to me, which I did. And the Admiral, of course, was a quarter-deck chap, and very bluff, very forthright, and very glaring with his very blue eyes. He said, you've had some experience of reading. And I said, no, sir. And he said, don't be a damn fool, I'm trying to help you. But I will write to you, and I'll let you know. Which he did, about 3 or 4 weeks later, and he said, would I go to Stoke-on-Trent as assistant station director at a salary of £5 a week? And I said, yes.
John, I have a feeling that you have told me that, in point of fact, there was a good deal of chicanery went on there, that your father was ahead of you.
He was, because what he did was, being the man he went round to Savoy Hill, and he went up to the commissioner, and he said, could I see Admiral Carpendale? And the commissioner quite rightly said, well, have you got an appointment? And the old man said, no. He said, well, I don't think he'll see anybody without an appointment. And the old man then pushed his card across the table in front of the commissioner, which had his title, Judge Sir Morton Snag, written on it. And the commissioner thought he'd better pay attention to this one anyhow, in these very early days. So Carpendale took the card up, and Carpendale said, well, send him up, wondering what it was all about. And they had a talk together. And my uncle, my father's younger brother, was an admiral of the Navy, so they got onto this subject very quickly. And the admiral then showed my father around the studios and went back into the office. And then the old man said to him, Admiral, what I've really come to see you about is about my son. To which old Carps hadn't a clue what he was talking about. And he said, what about him? He said, well, he came to see you some weeks ago, and you said you might be able to think up something for him. The admiral went out of the room, and he came back again, and he said, oh, yes, I saw him the other day, but, you know, we've got a waiting list already of 1,500 people. To which the old man, being a lawyer, said, well, look, Admiral, I'm awfully sorry for 1,499, but what about my son? And as a result of which, the admiral said, well, tell him to come and see me again, and I'll talk to him.
So, John, that led you really to Stoke-on-Trent in 1924. What was Stoke-on-Trent like, I mean, as a radio station?
It was only started in October, and I went up in December. So it wasn't a regular station, it was just a new one. The boss, J.C. Clarke, who'd only been in the BBC about, I think he'd been in Liverpool for 3 months or something, and he was sent down to go and start up this station at Stoke-on-Trent. And, of course, there weren't any listeners. It was a tiny, tiny little transmitter, 200 watts, the aerial was tied to a factory chimney, and it had four engineers, J.C. Clarke, station director, and myself as his assistant, and I knew nothing, and he knew very little more than I did, about certainly about broadcasting.
What sort of studios did you have, for instance? I mean, were they studios in the terms we think of them?
They were, to say they... It was a single studio with heavy drapings all round it and two, what you call them, bunkers, revolving fans in the ceiling, which, of course, didn't do anything except circulate very stuffy, hot air. And then we had a control room which only three people could possibly get into, and then a transmitter at a hut by the canal with its aerial tied to a factory chimney. And that was the entire staff, except for one woman who was the auntie of the children's hour, who was part-time and came in order to run the children's hour, which was the most important program we did, because it was a daily program. And to that program, we had to subscribe everything ourselves.
We'll come back to that in a moment, John, because what I'm looking at now is the sort of standards that Reith was setting at that time. He said, for instance, public service means primarily a standard and an outlook, and only secondarily a form of administration. Now, did this permeate throughout the BBC, the British Broadcasting Company, as it then was?
Totally. Totally. Old Man Reith, John Reith, who imbued us with the idea that you've got yourself into something and you've been taken on into something which is going to be worldwide importance. Never mind how small it is at the moment. Never mind how miniature you think it is. Never mind of the few listeners you've got. This is only the beginning of something which is going to be really a tremendous power, authority, worldwide.
This is London. It is with the greatest sorrow that we make the following announcement. It was announced from Sandringham at 10:45 today, February the 6th, 1952, that the King, who retired to rest last night in his usual health, passed peacefully away in his sleep earlier this morning. The BBC offers profound sympathy to Her Majesty the Queen and the Royal Family. This is the BBC Home Service. We're interrupting programmes to make the following announcement. It is understood that in accordance with arrangements between the three great powers, an official announcement will be broadcast by the Prime Minister at 3 o'clock tomorrow, Tuesday afternoon, the 8th of May. In view of this fact, tomorrow, Tuesday, will be treated as Victory in Europe Day and will be regarded as a holiday.